This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
Funny enough, we haven't actually talked about any of the detail of the specification about what's in version 1.4 of NVMe and what's in version 1.1 of NVMe over Fabrics, which, to be honest, was quite a lot of what we were intending to talk about today. So I don't want to lose too much time to be able to get onto that. 1.4 of NVMe, that's what you call the baseline, isn't it, Jay? What's new in that version of the version release?
So the good news is that there are a lot of changes going on with NVMe 1.4. The bad news is that there's a lot of changes going on for 1.4. One of the things that's probably useful to know before we even begin is that if you go to the nvmexpress.org website and you select the option that shows the specifications, it's the first button on the list, it'll go to a page that lists off, itemizes out all the different new features, all the corrections, all the things that are mandatory, and you can even download all the relevant technical proposals in a zip file. It's all there. Now, obviously, having said that, one of the things that we've done inside of NVMe 1.4 is to provide an awful lot more information about what's going on inside of the system. So for the sake of time, I'm going to try and see if I can simplify this in a good for audio format. So the way that NVMe tends to communicate between devices is generally through writing logs. So a log file will be created inside of a drive or inside of an NVM subsystem, which is often referred to as a target. And those logs will have all kinds of information. Events, you know, whether things have been properly deleted, they're called sanitized. What kind of access you have into the device. What are the windows of deterministic writing like Martin was talking about. Those sorts of things. And one of the things that we do inside of these logs is provide a list of updated features of the status of what's going on. At any given point in time, a host can access those logs or a specific, what we call a discovery controller or one of those kinds of things which doesn't actually do storage but does all of the meta communication and all the handling of the metadata or the administrative commands. All that stuff can be pulled and reviewed and acted upon by hosts. This is true inside of a consumer device. It's true inside of an enterprise device. It's true for the hyperscalers. Anything that you want to pull or access those kinds of features would all be written inside of these different logs. Now, of course, you have to have the capabilities and the features to be able to do this. So some of the things that we've done is we've created ways of isolating out the information into categorized areas, like they're called sets. Those have been created, which are kind of a collection of non-volatile media that's separate, you know, from other types of non-volatile media. It could be either logically separate or potentially separate, but you can act upon those sets. You can do things to those sets, like identify where they belong to, whether or not you want to write to those specific sets. It helps when you combine it with other features like deterministic I/O, for instance. If you have a deterministic I/O, you have to know where to write it to. So those kinds of things help. So there's a lot of different.
Can I just interrupt and ask a quick question? There, you started off by talking about logs and information. Was that the sort of stuff that we would have seen as something like smart data, or is that something completely different?
I would say that at a very high level, it's not that dissimilar.
Okay.
I think that when you want to find out the status of what your drive is doing, it won't. Now, smart data is very specific. Correct. It tells you a very specific about the diagnostic health of the actual drive.
Yeah.
These actually tell you about the nature of the logical construction of where the information is supposed to be in relation to the host.
Okay, right? Like a layout or a map of the actual drive itself.
It's more like it's even a little bit higher level than that. It's like if I want to know what my drive is capable of, and if I want to know what my drive is currently doing, I have to write it somewhere so that my host can find out that information, right?
Okay.
As opposed to just doing a stream of writing about, oh, I'm okay, I'm not okay, which is, I'm oversimplifying for the sake of argument here. So for instance, let's say I put in a drive and I want to know whether or not I can use this drive to be very specific about where I place my I/O. We call that I/O determinism. If the drive is capable of doing that, it has to be able to let the host know that when they first connect.
Yeah, okay.
When you first register the media, that gets written into its own specific type of area that the host can read. Or if I want to let the host know, I am going to be doing my garbage collection at these times. This is my ability to do a deterministic write window so that you don't try to write when I'm doing garbage collection. That allows me to give you finer tuned control of when you're going to start writing to me. And if you don't want to write to me at that point in time, maybe you can write to somewhere else.
Okay.
And I can separate out those those areas based upon sets and you know, I can different groupings and those kinds of things.
Okay. It sounds like to me that it's a combination of both parameters that describe features and capabilities, but at the same time are also dynamic enough for you to be able to say, yes, this is where you find this information. And it might be dynamic depending on the device, the way it's operating at that particular time.
I'd say that's a fair way of looking at it.
Okay, got it.
Yep. And to that end, these kinds of things are all about creating additional granularity in the way that you handle it, as opposed to just saying, look, I've got a toy box that I just store data in, right?
Yeah.
And to that end, we just make things more and more and more granular. Everything from where the data gets placed, to how it's accessed, to how it's erased, to how it's discovered. More control is typically better. And these kinds of functionalities have been added into 1.4. And there's a lot of changes.
Right. Great. Okay. So that's one feature. Anything else?
It's like one group of a lot of features,
okay,
actually.
Okay, fine. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that I don't want to steal Nick's thunder for his webinar, but there are a couple of things that have been changes in terms of the way that the namespace is identified. Now, for most people, this is not going to make a difference one way or the other, because they're just going to use whatever people qualify. But the way that NVMe 1.4 identifies the namespace, which is the equivalent of a volume inside of a logical equivalent, I mean, anyway, we use namespaces to identify volumes for NVMe devices into a operating system.
Okay.
If you change the way that you identify it, other things happen, right? So the new way of looking at that is going to be very important for people who are getting involved in how they want to identify reserving space inside of a drive for a namespace and so on. So this is one of the reasons why I mentioned earlier that 1.4 is a pretty pivotal version to take a look at.
Okay. What about for end users who are looking at the next version of this? It doesn't sound to me like if I was a consumer, I probably wouldn't see a huge amount. If I was the enterprise, I might see some benefit. But other than that, what am I going to really see?
No, you're absolutely right. For an end user, for a consumer who wants to put an NVMe device inside of their gaming computer, not going to see a difference. A lot of these things will have to be done at the operating system level, or if you're doing some sort of offloading card, that'll be done inside of the card. But the end user is not going to have to do any kind of configuration changes for this.
And I guess if you are building systems, there's a huge potential benefit that you can actually get from these additional features. You know, if you're actually a storage developer, as in developing a platform, or even if you're in the public cloud and you're using these drives very, very specifically.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, it's the same old way of doing things, right? I mean, if I can reduce the cost of effort, you know, by a factor of 10, and reduce my cost by, you know, my pricing by 5, I've made money at the same time as lowered my costs, and my customers get cheaper equipment.
Yeah.
Right. So it behooves system providers to figure out the best way to use these new features to get the efficiency that they're looking for, because that's really what this is all about, making very, very efficient and yet still have high communication inside of all these different devices.
The most interesting thing, I think, from a consumer's point of view is, and I think they'll tie it very closely together, even if it's not as tightly coupled as they may think, is NVMe 1.4 and PCIe 4.0. They're just going to look at this, Jay, and say, okay, everything's now faster. They're going to get faster performance out of their via NVMe drive they're going to put in their gaming PC.
Probably. I think that the reality of the situation is that we are always going to find some lazy developers. And if a rising tide lifts all boats, they don't have to do much to have their boat lifted. However, if you want to have, you know, performance and competitive and really adhere to, you know, some of the things that they want to try to get, there are some things in there that are going to make your life an awful lot easier down the road, rather than just popping it into a PCIe 4.0 slot and saying, oh, Bob's your uncle. There's a lot of stuff in there that can make life easier down the road, because at some point in time, there will have to be a paying of the piper.
Okay, so let's move on and talk about NVMe over fabrics, which I believe is at 1.1, but I'm not 100% sure whether we're actually at a position where that's now ratified or whether that's in that 45-day period of ratification still, just like NVMe baseline.
It's currently, as we are talking at this very moment, still in the 45-day member review. And we anticipate it's going to be released probably pretty soon. I've been going through the document with a fine-tooth comb myself and have found a couple of editorial situations, but it's all about, stupid things like misspellings and figures being labeled and that kind of stuff that just needs to be clarified, but nothing technical. I think we're going to see that the actual ratification is going to happen very, very soon, as we're talking right now. But I don't know when your audience is going to be listening to this before or afterwards, but by and large, it's pretty much going to be ready to go very, very shortly, if not already by the time somebody's listening to this.
Okay. The funny thing is, I don't honestly know when they'll be listening to this, because my delivery pipeline depends on what I feel like at the particular day of the week. So, things get mixed around, and I usually have a couple of spares, and it really depends on edit, but it could well be that it will be the end of the week that we're recording, which would make it around the 13th of September.
Okay, so, well, if it was 2020, then they'd be done. Yeah.
We're not gonna fall out into next year. Hopefully.
Yeah. No. So we're looking at probably an October release, if I'm not mistaken, or very shortly after that.
Right. So what can people expect in the NVMe over fabrics spec this time around? Is there anything that's significant that we should be aware of?
As a matter of fact, not a lot of surprises by at this point. We have already been talking about NVMe over TCP, which is going to be included as part of the NVMe over fabrics 1.1. But it's probably the biggest aspect of the new revision that people are going to be interested in. There are a couple of other smaller control and change, status change and optional features. But realistically, the big news is going to be NVMe over TCP, which there's a lot of material already available, both from the NVMe Express group as well as SNIA.
And like a lot of the other standards, that was out there and being used by people already. So was that like an unofficial version of the standard, or was that a version where people might have to modify what they were doing previously?
It's true that this was a bit unusual. I think this goes in part to how standards are made, and I don't want to bore people with some of the, the inside baseball here, or is there such a thing as inside cricket? I don't know. But fair enough. But the thing is that with different standards organizations, you have work that's being done by a number of different organizations. For example, with NVMe over fabrics, you have Rocky, you have iWarp, you have InfiniBand, you have Fiber Channel, and all of these have aspects that are done by things and groups other than the NVMe Express group. So Fiber Channel, for example, is standardized by the T11 group, and there's a working relationship between these different groups and NVMe Express. TCP was a bit different. TCP didn't belong to IETF, it didn't belong to IEEE, it didn't belong to the T groups and Insights. It effectively was an effort that was contributed to by a number of different people inside of the NVMe Express group, but they were also working on this in kind of a open way. Not open source in that particular way, because it's still kind of under NDA for as part of the NVMe Express is, but the actual release of the software itself was available through GitHub. And right now, it's been almost a year since it's been ratified now as a technical proposal. It just has to get rolled up into the specification of 1.1. And people have been able to download the software for running NVMe over TCP and play with it themselves for quite a while. To that end, it's kind of an odd duck in the way that things are being developed for some of the other fabrics transports, but it's still official nevertheless.
Okay, so that's fair enough then. So when it's not like it's a big surprise and people have to change things, it's pretty much going to just work.
Well, I mean, I hesitate to things that just work in this regard. But in general, there's a lot of material that's available in freely accessible areas for people to learn about it. One of the things that has been a hot topic has been the Intel open specification of SPDK to be used with NVMe over TCP. So let me back up just a bit because I think I have to unpack a little bit of what that means.
Yeah, sure.
Now, when we have that relationship that I was talking about before between a host and a storage target, one of the interesting things about NVMe is the parallelism, as I was talking about before. Yep. What TCP allows us to do is create individual TCP sessions for each individual queue pair that we're associating between a host and a target. Now, what's cool about that is that you wind up with being able to move those aspects around a little bit. So, for instance, again, remember we're talking about moving memory around, not just talking about accessing devices. Generally speaking, when you're doing NVMe, one of the problems is that it's so fast because of all of the different streams that you can have, all of the different access points that are, you know, these queue pairs, you wind up with an awful lot of I/O that can overwhelm a CPU or a link, for that matter. You can wind up really doing nothing but I/O, which doesn't leave an awful lot of effort or time for a CPU, for example, to do things in the kernel for handling I/O and virtualization and applications and so on and so forth.
Right, yeah.
So one of the things that's kind of useful, and I'm oversimplifying for the sake of the discussion, is something called the Storage Performance Development Kit that is being developed by Intel in an open source fashion. You can go to spdk.io, for instance, and learn all about it in all of its gory details. What they do is they effectively take a lot of this I/O and they put it into user space as opposed to being done inside of a kernel. The reason why that's kind of important and the reason why it's actually kind of neat is that instead of having your interrupts stop your CPU from doing what it's doing, now you can actually go and pull the data and the I/O. So, for example, if a CPU is busy, you can actually use a polling mechanism as opposed to an interrupt mechanism in order to be able to handle the I/O in a fashion that's suitable for what the tasks are for the CPU. In a nutshell.
So just for anybody who might not understand that, context switching when you have to interrupt the CPU obviously has got an expensive task to do, mm-hmm. and you want to try and avoid it if you can. So clearly not doing that is a positive thing because an interrupt is saving registers and various other things in order to swap to the context of the program you've just called to service that interrupt.
Absolutely correct. And it just so happens that TCP lends itself very nicely to this kind of environment. So you are effectively saving yourself a lot of that context switching that you'd normally have to do in kernel by allowing that I/O to be handled and the TCP stack to be handled for I/O in that regard. In this way with SPDK and the NVMe over TCP. And all of it is available for access via, you know, downloads on the internet without having to go through any particular vendor.
So that all sounds great. How does that now compare to the maturity of, say, what people might expect with things like Fiber Channel or even iSCSI in terms of the way that the specification has evolved and the way it's been implemented by vendors?
It's still in the embryonic stage, to be fair. The way that we assemble the packets for NVMe over TCP is a little bit different than the way that we handle something like Rocky or iWARP, even though iWARP uses often TCP as its transport mechanism. The way that it's easy to think of it is that TCP has, when I say TCP, I'm referring to NVMe over TCP here. I apologize. NVMe over TCP incorporates the headers for NVMe in each packet. So they're called protocol data units or PDUs. And each TCP packet has a PDU header in it. Now, that may seem like a little bit of, you know, esoteric trivia, but iSCSI does not. So when you send an iSCSI packet across a frame, it does not necessarily correspond one-to-one with the TCP packet it's being transmitted in. So as you wind up with higher bandwidths for iSCSI, for instance, you need to be able to store those packets and reassemble them at the TCP layer and at the SCSI layer. And since there's a mismatch, you may have to do a lot of retransmitting. With NVMe over TCP, the efficiency is a little bit better because you don't have to wait for the SCSI packet to come through to make sure that you have the appropriate number of retransmits in case something goes wrong. So it's actually a lot closer to something like ICER in the sense that you are able to track each and every packet back up to its corresponding NVMe command or NVMe send and receive, you know, queue pair.
Yeah.
And that what that winds up doing is it's a new way of thinking. it's a new way of actually implementing storage on Ethernet to a degree. So it's not very mature at all. But there are a lot of people who are very excited about it. I mean, very excited about it. The performance that some of the tests have been coming back have been surprising a lot of people. So I think that right now you're seeing a couple of appliances that do NVMe over TCP. You're seeing a couple of vendors who have solutions for offloading. I believe that probably by the end of 2020, you're going to see a lot more, and there's going to be considerable amounts of compliance testing and interoperability and those kinds of things to make it ramp up very quickly.
Great. I mean, I like the fact that we're going to see a lot of development. We're going to see a lot of evolution of this. But it sounds like we're going to expect a lot to come in the future. And I just want to touch back very briefly on this whole idea of standards refactoring, because we talked about this quite early on, and this idea that we've got the standards have got to a certain position and that they now might be slightly restructured and refactored as in terms of the way that we move forward. Is it worth just summarizing that again and going through it so we're clear on how we might see this evolve?
Sure, but I'm afraid I'm not really sure I follow what your question is specifically.
Okay, I will re-ask it again then. So I was under the impression that when we chatted in Flash Memory Summit that there was likely to be some sort of split where the consumer type features would be separate from the enterprise type features so that they wouldn't necessarily follow the same track when the product was released or the specifications were released. Is that true?
It's a little bit oversimplified, actually.
Okay.
So I think it's fair to say that what we're trying to do is apply the different techniques and features and options in a way that doesn't necessarily delineate between the consumer and the enterprise as much as the appropriate long-term versus short-term feature sets, right? Okay. So, for example, both the consumer side and the enterprise side both have very similar approaches to handling the protocol itself. They both have queue pairs. They both have administration queue pairs. They both do logging. They both do a lot of different things that are core to the idea of what is NVMe, what makes NVMe NVMe.
Right.
And so what we're looking to do is actually reorder, right? Think of it like a Hoberman sphere where you can pull apart the thing and put it back together again in a slightly different configuration, but it's still effectively the same. So the base specification, the actual core aspect that we think is going to be long-term, that everybody's going to be using for a very long time, like the queue pairs, for instance, those aspects are going to be I'm repeating myself at this point, but a core element upon which you can build consumer devices, enterprise devices, software, logical software, or physical thing, all those things that are based upon that effective core. And then the stuff that goes around it, the stuff that is an optional feature for enterprise or an optional feature for consumer, those kinds of things can be applied as necessary, but do not necessarily belong specifically in the base specification. And that's really what I was referring to, yeah.
Okay. I guess the reason I was asking the question is, and the reason for asking that in a bit more detail, is simply to understand whether we're likely to see a deviation in terms of the different device types. So if you look at the way the market works today with hard drives, SSDs, there's probably not really any difference. Well, there is probably obviously some differences, but you don't perceive a lot of difference in using what you might class as a consumer device or an enterprise device in an appliance or in an array. And I'm just wondering whether we're going to see a deviation in terms of the capabilities of devices to the extent that we'll think you can never use that consumer device in an enterprise scenario because it just won't work and it won't work in the same way.
Well, actually, I think we're going to find, and this is kind of an editorial comment, I suppose, I think we're going to find a bit of confusion because the consumer devices and the enterprise devices are going to look so similar. I think what we're going to find is that there are a lot of options right now for different form factors that are existing for both enterprise and consumer that overlap. One of the questions I get a lot, in fact, is, shall I use M.2 or NVMe? Well, the question sort of belies this misunderstanding as to what is a form factor versus what is a protocol.
Yeah, agreed.
And so what I think is probably going to be the bigger danger is that people are going to assume that, well, this is an M.2 stick. It fits exactly inside my laptop as it does inside of my server. And because of the fact that I don't really understand NVMe all that well, and M.2 is really associated now more with NVMe than it was with SATA, now I'm going to go ahead and just say, oh, I can use one for the other. So I think that's where actually the bigger problem may wind up being catching people out. The reality of it is that when you do, I mean, you raise a very good point. And if I can, I'd like to take the opportunity to try to solve that riddle for us. The main difference between consumer devices and enterprise devices has to do with the layer of data protection.
Okay. Yep.
So when you have an enterprise device, you have to protect every single IO. Now, in a consumer device, because of the cost element involved, there are cheats that happen inside of a device that you don't necessarily need to protect every IO. Right? And I mean, there's a lot of IO that goes on inside of a device that we're not really always familiar with. It's not quite so straightforward. There's a lot of caching. There's a lot of moving of data around, things, you know, going from one cache to another, from one location to another location. Enterprise devices need to protect those really, really well. Everything from the host all the way down to the storage of the media has to be guaranteed. Consumer devices, not so much. Right. Yep. So we don't do as much data protection on our USB sticks, for example, that we do inside of an array or an enterprise SSD. There are things that go on inside of the NVM Express feature set to help augment that, both in terms of what's necessary for the enterprise or hyperscalers or arrays or appliances that allow you to have greater control over that data protection. Some of the consumer stuff doesn't need it.
Yeah.
You don't really need to have a discovery controller that does multiple logs inside of a consumer device, right? You need to be able to have a discovery controller so that you know that it's there when you start up your phone, for example. But you don't need to have a lot of the stuff that goes on inside of the data protection realm because the logs just aren't necessary. You're not competing for resources.
Yeah, I guess we can...
That's the thing.
Okay, so yeah. I guess we can sum it up. You know, we can say that, yes, there's not necessarily a reason why you couldn't use the device, but if you're trying to build something that's reliable, solid, is going to recover in all sorts of situations, the chances are you're going to be using an NVMe device that was designed and implemented for the enterprise than you were using a consumer device.
Yeah, and I think if there's one piece of advice that I can probably give to anybody who is looking at doing this, don't try to skimp. Don't cheat just because it fits into a slot.
Yeah. I mean, that for me, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but this for me does question exactly how the software-defined guys are going to manage these sort of devices going forward, because it seems like their workload is increased significantly in trying to understand how to best use NVMe and new devices.
Well, one of the things that's interesting when we talk about the software-defined guys, my experience is far more familiar with the Googles, the Microsoft Azures, the AWSs of the world than the software level, I'm afraid. But to that end, a lot of the stuff that's going on inside of these NVMe features are for them to be used in a software-defined solution. So a lot of the stuff that, like the IO determinism, the deterministic write windows that we were talking about earlier, yeah, those things are specific to getting a lot of the software out of the way. So what's tempting for a lot of people who are not a multi-billion dollar hyperscaler is to say, oh, if Google's doing it, then I should do it too. Well, that's not really true, because AWS and Google and Facebook and these other companies, they have a very well understood network.
Yeah.
And they have a very well understood software system. They run 5 applications, not 5,000.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So they have control that the average enterprise does not. So their needs are very different. They want as much of the software to get out of the way. For an enterprise or a commercial solution where we're talking about much smaller environments, you don't want that software out of the way. You want that data protection because you don't have a very fine, granular, tuned network and storage system universally over millions of devices. So that's where I think that people need to pay attention to. Look, just because Google's doing it or just because Amazon's doing it, it's going to work for you. And that would be a mistake.
All right. So what can we expect in the future? What are we expecting in the next 18 months timeline?
Well, one of the things that we're looking at doing is creating efficiencies, right? Mm-hmm. So the refactoring part of it is all part and parcel of the idea that we don't want it to get too complicated for people to start off. We don't want a high barrier to entry. So we're trying to make it simpler to understand. We're trying to make it more efficient to use and implement. But we're also trying to add in specific features for different types of use cases. So one of the things that we don't have time to talk about is the potential for key value storage, different types of NVMe. Whereas we were talking about block before, NVMe is, key value is a different type of storage structure and those kinds of things. We're really trying to see how we can leverage the flexibility of these parallel queues in a variety of different ways. And you'll see computational storage taking advantage of NVMe. NVMe more as an interface as opposed to a device controller, those kinds of things. It's going to be a kind of interesting ride.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we can talk about that in the future when they come up. And I think there's some, you've just picked out two things there that are fantastic to come back and talk about another time. But for now,
awesome.
In terms of people going off and learning a bit more, what's the best place for them to look? Is this a SNIA thing? Is it a SNIA and NVMe Express website? What's the best place to go?
Well, the first place that anybody should go looking for NVMe is the NVMe website. That is nvmexpress.org. And the ratified specifications are right there, linked on the front homepage, along with a whole bunch of webinars and blogs and information. The wonderful people behind the scenes are very good at updating that site with all the latest information, including presentations that have been done at Flash Memory Summit, at the NVMe Membership Summit, at the Storage Developer Conference from SNIA, all those things. So definitely go to the nvmexpress.org website to take a look at the spec and everything that goes around it. A secondary place to look would be SNIA. Yep, SNIA.org, SNIA.org. And there is a lot of information that exists within SNIA to provide people with everything from the absolute beginner stuff all the way to some of the more really esoteric stuff as well. For those who are interested in the fiber channel side of things, fiberchannel.org, FCIA, has a lot of presentations on fiber channel NVMe. And it's a little bit different because of the nature of fiber channel that may be somewhat new to some people. And as a result, they can get a grip on how that works and maybe even get a good introduction as to why fiber channel might be a decent solution. Otherwise, they can look at me. They can actually find me on the web too, jmats.com. I write a lot of stuff on NVMe, a lot.
And Twitter?
Oh, yes. Dr. Jmats, D-R-J-M-E-T-Z.
Okay. You saved me asking that. I was actually going to ask you that last question, but you beat me to it, and you publicized yourself really nicely.
I don't do that very well, so I'm actually a little shocked myself.
Good. I liked it. Okay. Well, Jay, thanks for joining me today, Martin and I. It's been brilliant. There's some really good stuff there. Look forward to getting you back in the future. But for now, thanks for your time, and look forward to catch up soon.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.